Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this will be a fun one.
Hey, this is going to be a fantastic segment. We're going to catch up with some old friends, make some new ones. First up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast owner and founder of Colo ATL, Mr. Tim Kaiser. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing well, Stone. Thank you. Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Well, Tim, before we get too far into this, can you tell us about Colo? What does that even mean?
Well, colocation is a term that they use in the data center world where folks can actually come. It's not offices like y'all have offices here with people. They have their equipment, and they all put it in a facility such as mine, and they call that colocating.
And then Colo ATL, you serve the Atlanta area, or that could be the world could use your services?
You know, that's a good question because, yes, I have a presence here in Atlanta, but the internet's so powerful. Yes, I can connect anybody, not just in Georgia or the United States, anybody in the world.
And then, so what's in a Colo location? What's in there? So it's just big empty rooms with servers?
Servers, storage arrays, somebody like Netflix or Facebook could be in there. You know, all your traffic comes in. Here's a good example. The multiple listing service could be in my facility.
So in real estate, the people that have all the different listings all over
Correct.
The place.
So all the information would reside in my facility in mm-hmm. the co-location room. So any ISP, which is an internet service provider like AOL, Microsoft, when you type that in, they say, I want a two-bedroom home for $1 million in Atlanta. There's right. probably a few of those. And so it'll find its way to me down at 55 Marietta, where I reside. And they'll pull up, the little robot will go and grab that information, and then they'll send it back. Now, it might not send it back on the same provider. It might come in on AOL, go back on Yahoo. And that's what we do at our facility. So anywhere in the world, it would find me. They call it an IP. I have an address, like a mailbox. And it'll go through all the internet and find me and then give them the information and send it right back. So everything I just said took longer than it takes to get that information.
And then but if I'm going on this website, I'm going on, ABC company's website. But in actuality, that might be kind of some of the data might be living with you.
Yes, sir. That's absolutely correct.
And then so you do this, they're kind of like renting space on your equipment.
Yeah. And we actually call it leasing. But yes, uh-huh. it's the same function renting.
So now, how'd you get into this line of work?
Well, I, grew up and always wanted to be an engineer.
You wanted to be Colo? Your dreams of Colo all over the world.
I never had the dream. I kind of fell into it. God blessed me in this area. I'm a Georgia Tech graduate, so mm-hmm. I got accepted at Tech and graduated as electrical engineer and always wanted to fly. Mm-hmm. So I got my opportunity. I got to go into the Air Force, and I flew B-52s in Desert Storm.
Wow.
But while I went through school, I put myself through Georgia Tech, and I did the co-op program where I worked for a consulting company. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do, like drawings. And I actually found a niche that I started young doing drawings in telecom back in the early 80s when it didn't really exist. The internet's really kind of came up in the last 15, 20
right.
years. And to wrap that up, basically, I kind of came back after my time in service, and I started my own practice. I'm a licensed engineer, and all these people talk to each other. It's like, I remember Mindspring when they first started. I did their facility for Mr. Brewer, and then they said, then they talked. They just like, and then the other people would call me and say, hey, can you come help us? Can you help us? And you get to know everybody. And then one day they said, hey, Tim, why don't you start a Colo? And so 17 and a half years ago, I did. And
so at first, really though, good. The thinking was, I'm going to control all my servers. I'm going to put it in my own building. Is that how it evolved?
Well, what a lot of companies do, I'll use State Farm come to mind. They'll do that, and they kind of put it in a closet, and then it gets bigger, and then it starts putting out heat. Then all of a sudden, they find out people's like, it's got to be 24/7, and it'll go offline, and they're like, wow, we need to put it in a facility where we don't have to take care of all this. Let's put it down Tim's place. He's got generators. He's got UPSs.
And that's all you're doing.
That's all I do.
Watching that.
Space and power.
Right. Where if they're doing it themselves, that's kind of somebody's got to pay attention to that just as much as you are.
Yes, sir. They. I'd almost say they have to be an engineer or an engineer type of supervisor mm-hmm. that understands the equipment, because I have a lot of contractors help me. I kind of feel like I know a little bit. I'm not the jack of all trades.
Right.
But I have a lot of good people that work with me. I don't like to say for me, with me. Electrical contractors, UPS contractors, generators, they keep all this stuff working for me. And a company like that, they start off small. They'll start up maybe even at their house, so having the garage, and then it just keeps growing and growing and growing. And then all of a sudden, it's like, you know, I want to put it in a safe place where nobody can get to my information. And then you don't have to worry about, you know, if you're renting in this building, somebody broke in, if they have a fire, all that goes away.
So now when the person, so is that a typical path for your client? They started small themselves on their own devices.
Yes.
And they grow to a certain level. What's that level? Where's that tipping point where it's like, you know what, it's better to call those colo ATL folks?
Well, I don't know what the appropriate words to use, but we'll just say I accept everybody.
So you work with small companies as well as large companies.
If you, this is what I tell folks. Yeah, I started my whole company for the smaller person. Mm-hmm. So let's say you wanted to have a telecom company. So with you, with me, you can come and have half a cabinet. You have power and you can have 6 free cross connects to anybody you want for less than $1,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And then when people say, wow, I can't afford $1,000, I said, let me help you real quick. This is not where you want to cut your teeth in this organization. Let's try a different business. But for $1,000 a month, it's cheap. You can make $100,000 a month. You know, the internet has so much capabilities. You can sell. I mean, you can advertise. You know, look at Facebook, you know, Mr. Zuckerberg, I mean, bazillionaire.
Right.
Look at Bill Gates. You know, it's just phenomenal. So I started that any young man and or woman, they could even do it part time. And what's beautiful about it, what I love about it, it's called a VPN, it's called a virtual private network. So you could actually be here at your offices and you can ride the internet in a secure, what I'll call pipe or line straight to your equipment. Nobody can get in there. Nobody can get to it except you. So you can have it all there and it's still accessible like it's right down the hall.
But what is that point where I'm doing it myself and I'm like, okay, I've reached my limit. Is it just that it's cheaper to pay you $1,000? Is that when I move? Like, what's the pain that I'm having that triggers the move?
I think the biggest pain that we've all had is whether it's your cable TV, you're watching your favorite movie, your favorite sport game, and all of a sudden it goes off. You know,
that's a clue that maybe got a problem.
It's yeah. Pain, all right.
You're like, did he catch the ball? Did they win the game? And then on the internet, you know, we've all gotten accustomed to, we want our phones and internet to work all the time. Mm-hmm. And if our internet doesn't work, we're like, oh, you know, this provider is terrible. I'm going to go with the new provider because there's 10 of them always beating right on your door telling you, oh, if you go with us, we'll give you a great deal. So sometimes it's really not the $1,000 a month in rent they're paying me. They're paying me an insurance policy to never, basically I promise them 3 things. The power will be on 24/7, 365. You put heat in the room, I'll take it out. God forbid there's a fire, I'll put it out. So basically you can put your equipment there. It puts off a lot of heat. I make sure it all works 24/7. So to answer your question, if you have a larger business and you're offline for, we'll say, a minute, you right. might lose 100 customers. You might have 1,000 customers. I mean, I have some people that told me they were running 500,000 calls from India through the room a day. And I'm looking at that box and I'm like, really? 500,000?
Wow. Seems like a lot.
So if they're down for 10 minutes, you can kind of, you know, it's a exponential math. If you might, $1,000, you might have lost $100,000 in business. You could have paid me, you know, 100 months.
Right.
So now, that's kind of the breaking point. You want a place to be safe.
Now, how do you differentiate yourself from others in this field? Because you're not the only game in town.
That's actually correct. And I'm friends, whether I went to school or I've designed their facilities. I like to treat people like people. So I feel like that's my difference. So I don't feel like I have competitors because I don't have a board of directors that I have to answer to. You know, I have a wife and 2 puppies and we don't eat that much. But what I like to do is to help people. That's the biggest reason I do this business. I mean, everybody can say, I think there's 2 ways to make money. You can make money to make money or you can make money to help people. And if you help them, you make the good money. The more you help, if I can help you grow, then you want more space with me. And I'm friends with all of my, and I won't call them competitors, people that do what I do. I'm friends. I can either consult with them as an engineer and tell them different things than what they need to do, what I do, how I do it. There's so much in this market. There's enough for everybody. This isn't like a one-person market. Everybody can have it all. The internet, technology, that's why I love it. I went to Georgia Tech. Just staying up the technology is just, it's a full-time job.
Now, is that also part of what the benefits are working with a firm like yours is that you're always going to be on the cutting edge and staying up to date on all the technologies, whereas me as the customer, I don't have to pay that much attention because I'm kind of counting on you?
Yes and no. No, to the effect that I don't have to keep up on technology, on what kind of equipment you put in there. Basically, you can put anything you want into the cabinet. I'm kind of like a storage facility. You can put anything in there other than hazardous material. So you would be with someone else like a Sienna or other folks that make equipment that you like. or Cisco, you know, those are some of the bigger names. They'll get the equipment and you will put it in my facility. Mm-hmm. What I do is it needs power, and that's what I do 24/7. It's going to put off heat. I'll make sure it stays cold. And then I also have what I like to commonly refer to as glass. This is fiber, because fiber is like a piece of glass. We have to have connectivity. So as long as I provide the power and connectivity, you can put your equipment, but it's on you, because a lot of people, they'll spend $100,000 for, you know, a router, and in 3 months, the thing's only worth $50,000. It's incredible, because then there's this new one that comes out, and you can buy it or not replace it. Mm-hmm. So everybody has to run their own business model. I don't really get involved with that. All I do is make sure the lights are on, and you know,
that's
you
your part.
People.
So that's when they're working with you, they have their own equipment. They have somebody that probably runs that side of their business, and you run that, the kind of the location side.
In our world, they actually have a name for it, and they call it managed services. Mm-hmm. So in managed services, you would hire an individual, an IT guy, information technology guy, and that's what he would do. He would recommend you, here's three of them, buy one of these, put it in Tim's place. He'll help us, you know.
So you work with managed services companies
all the time.
And so are they a kind of a referral source for you, a partner?
A lot of times what they'll do is they'll come into a facility. We'll just say they were here meeting with y'all. And you say, we want a place to put our stuff and we want you to take care of it. It's like, I got a perfect guy. Let me talk to Tim. We can go and put it in Tim's place. Tim lets us come in and out 24/7. You know, I was former military, as I mentioned. So I'm not going to say our place is like a fortress, but it's just that close.
Kind of close.
So is that how the whole sales and marketing thing works for you guys, is through, I don't know if it's appropriate to call them channel partners, but people in that ecosystem that you collaborate with to serve clients? Or do you also find yourself going out into the marketplace with some sales and marketing activity?
I do on both. The gentleman that came with me today helps me with my business development, Mr. Savory. I also hired the premier telecom marketing company. They're called Jamie Scott & Associates. And Jamie's been doing this for, I think, almost 10 years. And they actually market my program. They do my website and things of that nature. Also, I go and speak at a lot of conferences. And I always like to believe in perception. If they believe I know everything, I keep my mouth shut and say nothing. I act like the expert. So I can talk about what I know, and that's what I think I've earned my success in. I only talk limited, just like we were talking today. You know, I understand space and power. I'm not the guy that understands, you know, all the equipment and the upgrades every day.
So you stay in your lane.
I stay in my lane. Yes, sir.
And then how has Atlanta been for you? Is Atlanta a growing market in this area?
Atlanta's not growing. Atlanta, in my opinion, is the market. As I mentioned before, you know, I'm a licensed engineer, so I'm licensed in 34 states. So I've got to design these type of facilities in 34 states of ours. And they're all the same except Atlanta. Atlanta has all fiber from the submarine cables from England and Europe over to us, and they come into Jacksonville, and then all the South American countries down in South America come up through Miami. So they have a direct path, Miami, Jacksonville, Valdosta, Macon, and then to me and to my partner across the street, 56, which is a DRT, Digital Realty Trust /Telex. So we control 80%, and I won't say control, but 80% of all internet traffic flows through our two buildings at 55 and 56. And the reason why is because our location.
In the world?
In the world.
Get out of here.
And we have
is
a direct.
Is that true?
Yeah.
80%.
Yeah. Well, we're down here. So, you know, the submarine cables come here. People love Atlanta. You know, from South America, it's easy to come up here. Texas is coming. They got a lot of great centers. A lot of great centers are popping up all over the country. Atlanta is a blowing market building. We have four different companies that want to build 1 million square foot facilities in here next year. It's crazy.
So now. So nowhere else in the world does 80% or more traffic come?
Well, that can always, you know, either increase or decrease depending on how more facilities and what kind of people and tenants and where they want to be. People love to be in Atlanta because of the weather, the location. I mean, the airport's great. You know, you can get on the airport, fly anywhere in the world. You know, it's a drive away to the mountains, you know, less than a day. You can drive to the beach less than a day. The weather's great. So far, it's been kind of up and down, but thank God we're not in the nor'easters like they are up east.
So now, how did that happen? How did that evolution occur that 80% of the traffic came to Atlanta?
Well, I can say I'm going to give Telex a big, you know, kudos on this. They have the building next door, and they brought a lot of the carriers and fiber providers to that building. And, I mean, I think they probably have over 300, 400 type tenant carriers. I have close to 100. So back in the day, I'd like to say, because I don't feel like I want to be old. I got a little gray showing, but we started, it kind of became an evolution, and it all started here kind of in a way. Now, Weston out on the West Coast, they don't have the opportunity because, you know, they're not close to Europe. They're not, you know, they're close to, you know, Japan and all, but not really close.
Right.
So we have direct paths. Like I have the fiber highway from here to Dallas, Dallas to Los Angeles, where One Wilshire is. There's some big beacon. Up in the north, we got 60 Hudson Street in New York City is a big telecom facility. You know, Telex down here is a big telecom. And then Ashburn is just a huge market up there. I mean, there's so many, I think Facebook's, the Googles, all the big players have not just, you know, 10,000 square feet. I mean, we're talking millions of square feet.
Right.
Huge, huge.
But they have to.
Yes.
Right.
And Google has a large presence here, and I think a bigger presence here in the Atlanta area because of the weather.
And then, so you see this is just the, we're still bullish on all the
very
things that
bullish.
Are happening.
I mean, just having four different companies thinking that they're going to come in, build out a million square foot facility and be able to fill it up. Yes. Very bullish.
Now, what's on slate for you guys moving forward?
Well, it's a simple plan. I do space and power for, you know, people. I like helping people. So anybody can come with me, my existing tenants. A lot of people, you know, will get tenants and they forget they're there. I like to help them because those are your best ones. You know, why get a new tenant when you can help your
existing one
grow three times? Right. I've had people come in that did half a cabinet, didn't think they'd make it. Now they have 10 cabinets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can kind of do the math. I mean, that's almost 100% better than I'm doing because of them. So I help everyone, whether, you know, you have one cabinet, I have a couple tenants that have 130 cabinets with me. I treat them all the same.
Now, when you say help them, how do you help them? Like, are you talking with them regularly? Because it sounds like in some ways it might be, or could for some maybe lesser competitors be a set it and forget it. They think they're done once they have the customer.
A lot of times. Now, this is the beautiful part about me. You asked me before about the difference between me and my competitors. Right. People do. Difference between me and I, you know, and I got my phone with me here today. I turned it off so the crowd wouldn't hear it. But if you need something or something goes wrong, I'm very unique. You can call me. And I will answer the phone.
Like when you're saying it's not the collective me, it's actually you?
It's actually me. No robotics check or any of that good stuff.
No AI going there.
You can call me, and if you have a problem or something went down. What kills me is we'll lose power downtown. We had on April 1st, and I thought it was April Fool's Day or something. The whole grid went down downtown. They had a Georgia Power transformer exploded. They had NCAA game there. All the street lights went out. And people are calling me. They're like, Tim, I see we're having an outage. We have a problem. I'm like, is your equipment on? Yeah, everything's great. Then we don't have a problem. But, you know, I'm looking around and I'm sweating because of, I'm going to say through my education at Georgia Tech and learning everything, our systems all work. And I think maintenance. So, you know, you need to maintain your equipment. And a lot of folks don't do that. It's kind of like you have a car, it sits out there a year, and then you want to go run out there to take your wife to the emergency room because she's ready to have a baby and the car don't start. And you're kind of like, well, you hadn't started in a year. You need to maintain it. So that's what we do down there.
And for you, having seen the kind of the growth of this whole industry from almost, I don't want to say the beginning, but near the, you might have seen the beginning of the beginning. What's been the most rewarding part for you?
Well, I will say, and I'll show my age a little bit. I did see the beginning because, Mr. Savior could probably chime in on that one. When I went to Georgia Tech, we didn't have computers in our phones or laptops or iPads and all. They actually had a computer center that you had to actually sign up and get an hour to go sit on this big terminal. Kind of feel like you were in a Star Wars spacecraft. And that was us, our introduction. So I was 18 when I started Georgia Tech. And so I got to see it go from that to here. And my biggest reward has been I've helped so many people build their business. And you asked me and I didn't answer. What I do is try to get more providers, you know, more cost effective, you know, means for those to do their business and not have to pay a pretty penny that they would at another place.
So you're kind of, I don't want to say you're their partner, but you're kind of watching their back in that regard.
All the time. Basically my option is what can I do to help you make money to pay me rent? It's a simple model.
I like it. All right. So where can our listeners go to learn more? What's the best way for them to reach out and have a conversation with you or somebody on your team?
Well, through my website, it's colo@atl.com. It's short for Colocation Atlanta. 11 acronyms being in the Air Force. And I like to put on there everything that I have, the people that I have, so you can kind of see what I do and, you know, who resides with me.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for coming out and hanging out with us this morning, man.
I can't believe. Thank you for letting me talk. I feel like, you know, get me started here. You have to turn me off.
Well, keep up the good work and keep us posted. All right.
Thank you all for having me. Thank you.
Hey, how about staying with us? We're going to talk to a couple more folks.
Absolutely. I look like two great people here. I'd love to hear what they say.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone, Mr. Brian Daly. And Brian, you're with Ground Floor. I've got money with you. I haven't spent it yet. But the last time you came in, I put some money in the kitty for my daughter and I to learn about that. So Brian's with Ground Floor. Delighted to have you. And we have Dara Albright back. How are you?
I'm okay. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, fun stuff. So Brian, let's start with you. Get us caught up, man. What's going on in your world?
Well, as you know, because you've actually joined us as a customer. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
We set out 5 years ago on an audacious mission to change how people get to invest. The plain fact of the matter is the 95% of us who do not meet the regulatory standard to be what's known as an accredited investor, we're not getting, not only we're not getting our fair share of the financial pie, we're not even getting served the same thing. Ground Floor set out to change that. We've grown up here in Atlanta, moved to Atlanta about 4 years ago, and couldn't be happier that we made that move. It's been a long journey. I'm happy to catch you up on, we have some really interesting developments with the company to share today, and it's great to be here with you.
Well, why don't we start at the beginning? So Ground Floor allows investors to invest in real estate primarily.
Yeah. I mean, the plain fact of the matter is, if you go talk to your broker or your financial advisor, most of the stuff that they're going to serve you, that they're actually authorized to serve you, isn't the best stuff for you to invest in out there. The fact is, I mean, even if you are a private wealth client at Goldman Sachs with $10 million, that's what it takes. You have $10 million
just to get in the door.
Just to get in the door with Goldman Sachs. Even if you're there, you don't have the full choice that you would have if you were better situated. And that's because of some financial realities about the way the world of investing works. Dara has been working in this field for 20 some odd years and knows it well. That's because of the way that our securities laws work. But now we have the happy intersection of some developments in securities law, some developments in fintech, and some innovative risk that, you know, we've taken on to build a new product for people. So yes, we allow people, if you have as little as 10 bucks, you can have a tiny slice of a loan on a real estate investment project. Now, most people, you know, come with, say, $1,000. And what's amazing is just with $1,000, you can build a portfolio of 100 of those loans. Our investors are making 12, 14, 10%, depending on the risk they choose and the portfolio they build. That's the rate of return they're making on their investment in less than a year. In fact, 8 to 10 months on average.
Well, and I love the website because we all know in this room, or most of us do, how proficient I am, not with some technology, but it's so easy to navigate and so easy to read the background on the risk profile on these loans. And I love everything about what you're doing.
Well, thank you for that. You know, we just thought it was time for ordinary people to get to be the bank. I mean, if you think about it, you put your money in the bank, what does the bank do? They turn around and lend it out.
Right. They go make money with your money.
Right?
Right.
Why shouldn't you get to do that? I mean, the fact is, whether people actually have the power that they think they have, or whether they actually do, whether they do or not, they think they do. And because they think they do, they act like they do. And when you put something up like a platform like Ground Floor, what we have seen people do with it is amazing. They're beating brokers. They're beating financial advisors. They're beating hedge funds. On a risk-adjusted basis, we have ordinary people who are smart enough and have the power with a little bit of money to go make as much money as any Wall Street trader is making. They're beating the market. They're crushing the market. To say they're beating the market actually doesn't give them full credit.
And then when you're saying the person who can use Ground Floor is anybody, you don't have to be accredited. You don't have to at certain net worth.
No, it's open to everyone. If you're just getting started, you don't even have a job, but you have $100, you have 10 bucks, you can get started saving. And that's the thing, right? The truth is saving and investing isn't motivating for people. And why? Because most people think they're going to get screwed. They don't trust the intermediaries. They don't think they know what they're doing. They're intimidated. It costs money. And the truth is, if you look at most retirement funds, most 401ks, most funds that people put their money into, studies show that as much as half to two-thirds of the profit that those investments make, and you're taking risk to make those investments, right? When you take those risks and half to two-thirds of the profit goes to the value chain that supplies that to you, the brokers and the managers, like even some of the REITs that are out there that are new and offered under the same regulatory rules, when you pay a fund manager, not only are you giving up control, you're giving up a fair chunk of what you get to make. And that pays up over time. That adds up over time. So in a world where people need to save more, what's most exciting and important about Ground Floor is not the return that we deliver, but the control and the belief that it's worth it and that you can control your own financial destiny. That's what we're playing for. That's why it's important. Now, does it matter that it happens to be in fix and flip, you know, real estate projects that are all over the country? I mean, that's kind of cool because people watch house flipping shows and right. They kind of identify with it.
They think they understand it, right?
Yeah, and you know what? At some level, at any given point in time, 60% of Americans own a house. So you already are an investor in the asset class. In fact, it's the most important, largest asset that you have on your personal balance sheet for the most part, for 60% of Americans. So people actually do know something about it already. I mean, I'm not here to tell you to invest in some initial coin offering of something you could hardly understand. We're not telling people they could speculate. This is it's an investment. It has some risk, but it's backed up by a house. You get to be the bank and you're paid handsomely for it. That's why it's been so incredibly popular. We have a wait list. It's a wait list that's a couple thousand investors long. We're trying to let in as many as we can. We launched nationwide back in January. We received approval from the federal government to now offer this in all 50 states.
Right, because when you started with just Georgia?
Well, when we moved here, Georgia was one of only two states. I loved hearing how Georgia's special in the world of telecom. I didn't actually know all of those facts that we heard earlier today. Georgia's also special because it was one of only two states, thanks to Secretary Kemp, who's now running for governor. Secretary Kemp and his office put forward these regulations that only Georgia and Kansas had that allowed small issuers like us to offer financial security to everybody, now within boundaries.
I thought Dara is the one that pulled this on. Yeah, this was her. You helped, I know.
That was your side hustle right there.
Dara's been at this behind the scenes in really influential ways for a long time. And one of the great things about moving to Atlanta is we struck up a friendship too.
Right.
Atlanta has a lot to offer from a regulatory point of view, from a talent point of view, from an expertise point of view. It's an incredibly important fintech hub, in addition to being an important telecom hub. And so, yeah, we moved here. We prototyped the product using those rules here in Georgia for about 18 months. And then after spending about $1 million on legal fees, thank you to our angel investors, to our law firm, to our VC, to our venture capital firm that helped finance us in the early days, we qualified with the SEC to offer this across state lines in 9 states originally. And then in January, we qualified for the higher level rules to do it in every state across the country.
Yes.
So now every people all over the country can get access to Ground Floor and to the offerings?
If you are fortunate enough to get the wait list, and I get through the wait list, I'm about to tell you how to do that because we're doing another thing. If you're interested in this, our mission is to open up these previously private capital markets because that's where the returns are. And we think people are smart enough to invest in them. We know we can build a product or series of products that are safe for people, risk-adjusted basis. There's, of course, risk. I got to say that. But we've done a new thing. We have now decided to finance the company itself the same way.
Oh, so you're going to open that company up?
We have.
Wow.
Now anyone, for as little as $100, can own a small slice of Ground Floor itself. You too can now be a venture capital investor.
We just had yesterday, TerraCycle is another firm that has done that. Mm-hmm. I think they put 25% of their company up.
There you go. It's happening. This is a new thing that's happening in the financial world. It's something that Dara's been watching for a long time.
So are you on board with this, Dara?
I am. I mean, you know, as Brian said, you know, we go back now a couple of years and, you know, what I think Ground Floor has done, they're true trailblazers in the space. And really with the ability to you know, look at what was happening from the regulatory perspective and be able to then take that and create these new products for retail investors. And what you guys have done is just really phenomenal. You actually set, you know, you actually are trailblazers, as I said, in the space. I mean, there are a lot of companies that came in and started following. What Brian's talking about with the regulation, when the Georgia had a regulation called the Invest Georgia Exemption. And that was basically Georgia-based companies allowing Georgia residents an opportunity to invest in local businesses. What Brian's now talking about, so he kind of tested out, created a new product using this state-level, we call it crowdfunding exemption or piece of legislation. What Brian, what Ground Floor has done, which is really exciting, and they were the first to do this, was let's take that on a national level. In order to do that, you have to find an exemption, securities exemption that allows you the opportunity to do that, to create a product to bring to the masses. So the Jobs Act was passed it was signed in 2012. It took a while for it to actually be implemented and come into effect. But there was Title IV of the Jobs Act, which is the Reg A Plus exemption,
right?
Which is what Brian used. And this was just very, very innovative. When our legislators first came out with the Jobs Act and introduced the Reg A Plus exemption, their original intention was, you know, let's create, you know, a way to get more companies into the public markets, smaller companies into the public markets. And, you know, the problem what we were having, and we still do, is that the bulk of businesses, you know, they go through that very traditional path of capital raising from, you know, friends and family, angel investors, venture capitalists, you know, then you go public when you're, you know, billions of dollars in market capitalization. Well, when you're doing something, you know, when you're following that traditional path, what has really happened was that all of the growth, you know, because these companies, every company starts at zero, you know, and right. Companies, you know, they grow. What happens is the growth of a lot of these companies that were going public at such later stages in their life cycle, well, all that, you know, that appreciation, was occurring in, you know, the hands of venture capitalists.
Right, before the public got a hold of it.
Exactly. So, you know, it should have been appreciating in the retirement portfolios of ordinary Americans.
Right, the ones that were kind of the trailblazers in using the product. Like, right. So they don't get any of the benefit of it.
That's exactly
they're
right.
They're the ones who are investing their time and their privacy into the products, and then they're not getting the payoff.
I mean, this occurred to people who had bought the Oculus Rift product via Kickstarter back in 2012 or something
around
along those
time,
lines.
Right.
Yeah.
So they funded that product.
They did. And then Facebook bought Oculus Rift for $1 billion.
Right.
And then those guys got the t-shirt. They didn't get any of the $1 billion.
I get the emails from our customers, right? I can only imagine what the email says. Hey, how do I cash in my stock?
Yeah.
You don't actually own stock. Well, and that's part of why we figured with Ground Floor, you know, why should venture capitalists get all the upside? We raised venture capital in November of 2015. We're fortunate to have a bunch of early stage investors, funds, angel groups, individual angels in our company. I mean, we've raised over $7.6 million from those sources. But this time around, now that the business is far enough along, as Dara's describing it, you know, it's not an initial public offering. The stock's not traded on NASDAQ or anything
right.
yet, but it's an opportunity as an individual investor for only $100. Now, most people on average are investing a couple thousand. We have people who are investing tens of thousands, but we're open to everybody and everybody can have a piece of that. And people who've used the product and believe in it, it's a short putt for them. They're like, hell right. yeah, right. I'm helping make this happen.
Right. I'm already in.
You know, so I'm already right. in. I may as well benefit right. from this company growing. And so I think, you know, why should VCs have all the upside? They shouldn't.
Now, Dara, is this something that companies of any size can do, or do you have to have relationships with the SEC? Do you have to have sales of a certain level before you can offer to the public a portion of equity to the crowd?
Well, it depends what exemption that you're operating under. So
under this Reg A plus.
The Reg A plus, I mean, we have seen a lot of very, very early stage companies, you know, trying it out. But I think for the most part, where you really see the opportunities in Reg A plus, or where it's really most appropriate for, are companies like a Ground Floor, or, you know, or companies that are more mature. You know, they're just not, you know, not sitting at a bar writing on a napkin.
I don't think they're past the napkin stage.
They're past the, you know, they're generating revenue. Their model is been proven. You know, the interesting thing really about Reg A plus and using it was that, you know, originally the intention was, okay, you know, let's use this as an opportunity for companies to actually, you know, an easier way for them to get to the public markets at an earlier stage.
Right.
So that was,
that was the intent,
the original intent. But the reason, the most interesting thing about it was what they didn't foresee, and really what ended up happening, and this is because of pioneers like Brian at Ground Floor, was, wow, we could actually take this Reg A plus, and we don't have to use this to, you know, apply this to an IPO or an equity type of structure. We could actually create a new fixed income asset class out of this, you know, and now, so that's what they've done. I mean, they've created this new product, this new fixed income product for retail investors for as little as $10. I mean, you know, it's 2 days at Starbucks.
Right.
You know,
you could have a house, a piece of a house.
Right. I mean, it's pretty incredible when you think about it. And I think that that's the most exciting. I think that what we're going to see a lot more companies, you know, using that kind of ingenuity where you're taking, we call this new regulatory environment RegTech. We call the platforms, the opportunity where you could buy this online or through apps, these investing apps, FinTech. You know, it's a very powerful combination. And together they're creating AltTech, or these new, you know, alternative asset products. And I think, you know, it's very interesting. I read an article the other day, you know, people, you know, asset classes, the interest in various asset classes shift, you know, it evolves, it shifts right over the years. And it's just very interesting, you know, in 2008, we've erased like $16 trillion, you know, in wealth after, you know, the crash in 2008. And what's interesting is that even though we've seen the markets come back, you know, stampeding, I mean, you know, and then some, people, the retail investor, they are still not in the equity. They still own not only much less equities by themselves, even equity funds. And it's just, I think that people have really, there's a whole new mentality to the today's retail investor. They've lost trust in these traditional asset classes. They're looking for, you know, better opportunities. I mean, you know, here's a product for as little as $10, you could, you know, be generating, you know, 12, 13, 14% annually. I mean, where are you going to get that? You're not going to, certainly not going to get that in a bond fund. You know,
right. I guess people don't understand how difficult or historically difficult that has been.
Right.
And then maybe their expectations are kind of skewed because they see people like, oh, I invested in Facebook, and they hear these stories, you know, I invested, now I'm a billionaire or whatever. And they don't see that they have control of that path a little bit, at least, and have opportunities like this. And some of investing is, if you can make it so simple for them to do and get in and see a return, you would think that more and more would be embracing it. I would guess that's why you're growing so much, because more and more are embracing it.
I mean, looking at the behavioral psychology of it, I mean, the plain fact of the matter is investing for most people is boring. It's boring. Who wants to spend your weekend researching investments and learning how to be better?
Just Dara.
Me too, but it is.
Well, I
most
have.
People
I
mean, are not that way.
At age 16, my dad made it very motivating for me. He said he'd match a dollar for every dollar I put into something called a mutual fund. Now, kids, I had to go to something called a library. and I had to research what the hell that was.
That's crazy.
You know, it made it very motivating for me. But, you know, the idea that, you know, the idea that, you know, we're going to have everybody all of a sudden become interested in investing because it's good for them is like telling people that they're, if you just eat more vegetables, you'd have less heart disease and lower cholesterol. It works for a little while and you might get scared into it probably too late. But we try to make it fun. So, you know, when you invest with us, you get little updates about your portfolio. You know, you get little updates about
pictures.
You see, well, you hear about, you know, this stage of the renovation,
right?
The house got listed, or there's a little bit of drama sometimes where the project goes sideways or it's late or it might be in default and you're like, oh no. And then you realize it's only one of 100 different loans that you have in your portfolio and it's going to be okay.
Right.
And that's what investing is, right? There's some risk. There's a portfolio. We try to train people about that and we try to make it as engaging as we can. And the whole idea is it doesn't take a lot of time. I mean, who wants to spend a lot of time deciding where to put your 10 bucks, right? We train people about the system and about the way the product works in general. And then, you know, we make it as engaging as I think it can be.
Now, are you seeing young people open to this or are they still gun shy?
Young people embrace it because young people they don't trust the system.
That's what compelled me, to be perfectly candid with you, that's what compelled me to get involved was because my youngest is very interested in investing.
Right.
And that just made it wonderful to go to your platform and get her started.
Right. Great. I love hearing that because I think people my age, you know, I'm in my 40s, you know, we're smart enough to be skeptical. We have more and more money to invest. You know, they may put a little mad money in it and kind of test it out. Younger people are more likely to get their start with something like this. Mm-hmm. You know, just like young people are more likely to hold, you know, a bunch of cryptocurrency.
Right.
Because they don't know any better. They didn't go through the dot-com collapse in 2000. They don't know what the downside risk really looks like. I think in creating this product, we were very careful to create a first lien debt product. That's the best, safest part of the capital stack to be in. We were very careful to create a short-term product where you get your money back in 6, 8, 10 months on average. That's important because, you know, the fact is a lot of people are still new at investing. I mean, I have friends who, even at this age, or friends of my parents who, you know, will call me up and say, I want to start doing this, but I've never made an investment before. You know, but tell me the basics, right? And for them, I like it that I know they're in the same position as the bank. Okay. It's a great position and they're not in it for very long. So they can kind of try it.
Right.
The entry point is pretty low. And we did that very purposefully because we have a big, broad mission to change the world as much as we can with as quickly as we can.
Now, one of the challenges with Ground 4 for investors were that the loans were coming and going. Like if you didn't get in like immediately, right, that there was... Yeah, they were done. They were filled. How are you addressing that?
What a great problem to have.
No, it's great.
Let me say that.
Every disruptive technology, I've had the privilege in my career to work with a lot of disruptive technologies. One of the hallmarks of a disruptive technology is it doesn't do a lot of the things that people want it to do in the early going. It's a headache. And that drives a lot of people away from disruptive technologies. Some people are willing to tolerate that and willing to embrace it. And we know it's a problem. There's more demand for this product than we can fulfill.
Right.
But we refuse to lower our lending standards.
But that's the trap, right? That's where it's like, okay, look, we got so much demand, we're just going to start kind of getting into gray areas where...
We haven't done that.
Right.
You know, in fact, if we have an analysis for people who are oriented this way, we did what's called a vintage analysis of a couple cohorts of loans. And it shows that as we tripled our volume of loans in the same time frame, we tripled or arguably quintupled the volume of loans, our quality improved across every measure. Mm. Now, that's not something that most lenders can say, but that's because we are so focused on making sure that the product performs and that we uphold standards. Now, as we get bigger, we'll do a broader variety of loans. You know, we used to do these second lien, second position loans that are much riskier. You know, they yield 23% or 20%, but they have higher loss ratios.
Right.
You know, now, if you invested the same amount in every one of these 12 high yield risky loans that we used to do and don't do now because we discontinued the program until we got bigger, you did really well. You made an exceptional rate of return of about 14, 15%. If you put all your eggs in the wrong basket, however, which human nature might you know, do from time to time. You didn't do as well. You might have lost some money.
Right.
So we're very intentional about making this a good product for most people, taking cognizance of the reality of what human behavior is. And, you know, we want this to work for real people in the mass market for a really long time.
Now that anybody in the country can invest, does that mean you can buy properties anywhere in the country?
We have chosen to lend in about 27 markets across the country. You know, they're a diverse set of markets in different parts of the country, different size, metro areas. We're always looking for new places to lend. But we're careful about that too, because we want to make sure we have the right providers to do inspections, to do real estate.
So there has to be a whole ecosystem in any of the markets you go in that can...
We don't have to build it ourselves.
Right, but you have to find them and partner with them.
Yeah, and we got to vet the partners and make sure that they're up to our standard. And but we've done that in about 20 some odd markets across the country.
And then is the roadmap just to be in more and more markets like that?
We will. Yeah, we're going to start... we're actually going to start focusing intently, even more intently on certain markets. We're going to have certain markets where we're very, very focused.
Right. So you do these 27, focus within that subset into...
And then we'll start to add more.
Right. And then keep just going, push and pull.
The idea is to let people build a very diverse portfolio. We worried at the beginning that people would not want to invest outside their town or their city.
Because they could drive by it. You thought that was like part of the comfort of, right, I can go by and I can see it.
People do like that idea that someone can drive by. But what the behavior we've seen is that people are voracious allocators. You know, they go out and they will invest anywhere if they like the profile of the borrower. And maybe some people invest because they like the picture.
Well, I like the idea of being at the cocktail party and say, I need to check on my Los Angeles property. I'll be back in a minute.
Exactly.
All right. So if somebody wanted to get in on the ground floor, where do they go?
Well, you can go to groundfloor.us. If you want to check out the equity offering, you can either click on the link there or go to groundfloor.us/equity. And we've got a new shiny corporate video there where you can see some of our customers talking about us and how they've used the product. And, you know, like I say, everybody who invests in the equity offering gets to skip the wait list.
And so you can invest in properties at the ground floor, and you can invest in ground floor.
You can invest in ground floor itself.
And you get to break in the line. That's what
right.
I
you cut the line,
I
like the fast pass. And Dara, if all things fintech, start with you, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, I kind of look at my role, I guess, as an advocate and as also as someone who really feels, I don't know, it's my calling to bring these products to the masses. Mm-hmm. I have to, you know, it's great these products are available, but if nobody knows about it, nothing will ever change. So, you know, my goal is to really also speak about these products, educate the masses, but kind of talk about them and show what these products are, why they should be investing in a fun way, you know, in a way that they could understand, not speaking in financial terms. And so that's kind of where I sort of see, you know, the future going. You know, people want to kind of get an idea of what's happening in the space. They could go to DaraAlbrightMedia.com. There's some fun articles and videos there. FintechRevolution.tv. There's actually a great interview there with Brian and a bunch of other videos. And that's where I really see it. But I do think the change is coming. We are going to see the masses really embrace these new products. These are the products of the future. In fact, you know, I would even argue that cryptocurrencies are replacing the equities, you know, the risky equity play of the past. That's kind of, you know, the money now. And you talked about millennials before. I'll just say, you know, millennials, they're not engaged in traditional Wall Street. Millennials would actually rather go and have a root canal than go visit a bank. So
some of us old folks are the same way.
Right. And they'd rather have an app than they would
and
to
you're
enter
see,
a bank.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
And I think, you know, the robo-advisors, you're seeing all these digital financing apps, digital savings apps, these forced savings after time. This is all just the very, very beginning. There's a great one out there called Worthy. Mm-hmm. You could check that out at joinworthy.com. And it's basically an app that lets you go out there and as you're shopping, It's a roundup. So as you're spending, you're accumulating money and you're able to then apply it, and it will ultimately be applied to products, you know, like a ground floor.
And you have a wider variety of products.
Exactly. And it all comes down to, you know, the more products that come out that, you know, that are introduced into the marketplace, the better. Because if we know one short way to make money in finance and investing, it's diversification. That's the only proven strategy that has ever worked. You know, look at over, you know.
Right, diversifying and compounding, right?
Exactly, exactly.
And there's one that comes before that that just slays me. It's actually doing it. I mean, there are a lot of folks out there that talk about investing a lot, just, you know, Joe Sixpack, and they just don't consistently do it. Am I right?
You're exactly right. And you know what? A lot of it is because, look, the minimums have gone up, up, and up, and up. And now they're coming down, 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 down. So, I mean, you know, for $10, it's a no-brainer for anyone. You know, skip Starbucks 2 days. Go, you know, invest in a piece of real estate.
There goes our Starbucks sponsorship. Yeah, thanks. He's mentioned that twice. Right. There's a powwow coming up in May, right? The FinTech.
Yes.
We're going to be broadcasting live.
Oh,
there's a reason I know this.
Okay, great.
Or at least that's our plan.
FinTech South.
FinTech South. Right. Yep.
But that's what I know about it. That's all I remember about it. But there's all kinds of folks are coming together there, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be a great event.
And then you're still out speaking all over the place, right?
Yeah, I'm still out doing the same old, trying to get out
there.
You're
evangelizing and educating, and somebody has to be out there to explain this to the layperson because, you know, a lot of people just shut it down. They don't understand it's too complicated. They don't want to think about it, but they're missing opportunities every day.
It's true.
I mean, they don't ring a bell when the stock market or the markets are going up or down. So you got to be in it to win it, right?
Right. Exactly.
I'm going to write that down.
All right, Dara. So once again, your website?
DaraAlbrightMedia.com and also FinTechRevolution.tv.
Good stuff. Well, thank you all for being part of the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton, our producer, Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.